Translation by Srila Prabhupada. The Supreme Brahman is beyond mental speculation. He is self-manifest, existing in his own bliss, and he is beyond the material energy. He is known by the crest jewels of the Vedas by refutation of irrelevant knowledge. Thus, in relation to that Supreme Brahman, the personality of Godhead, whose glory had been shown by the manifestation of all the four-armed forms of Vishnu, Lord Brahma, the Lord of Sarasvati, was mystified. What is this, he thought, and then he was not even able to see. Lord Krishna, understanding Brahma's position, then at once removed the curtain of his yoga maya. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. It's quite a long purport, just warning. Brahma was completely mystified. He could not understand what he was seeing, and then he was not even able to see. Lord Krishna, understanding Brahma's position, then removed that yoga maya covering. In this verse, Brahma is referred to as Iresha. Ira means Saraswati, the goddess of learning, and Iresha is her husband, Lord Brahma. Brahma, therefore, is most intelligent, but even Brahma, the Lord of Saraswati, was bewildered about Krishna. Although he tried, he could not understand Lord Krishna. In the beginning, the boys, the calves, and Krishna himself had been covered by yoga maya, which later displayed the second set of calves and boys, who were Krishna's expansions, and which then displayed so many four-armed forms. Now, seeing Brahma's bewilderment, Lord Krishna caused the disappearance of that yoga maya. One may think that the maya taken away by Lord Krishna was Maha Maya, but Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments that it was yoga maya, the potency by which Krishna is sometimes manifest and sometimes not manifest. The potency which covers the actual reality and displays something unreal is Maha Maya, but the potency by which the absolute truth is sometimes manifest and sometimes not is Yoga Maya. Therefore, in this verse, the word Aja refers to Yoga Maya. Krishna's energy, his Maya Shakti or Swarup Shakti, is one, but it is manifested in varieties. Parasya Shaktir Vibhideva Shruyate. Shvetashvatar Upanishad 6.8. The difference between Vaishnavas and Mayavadis is that Mayavadis say that this Maya is one, whereas Vaishnavas recognize its varieties. There is unity in variety. For example, in one tree, there are varieties of leaves, fruits, and flowers. Varieties of energy are required for performing the varieties of activity within the creation. To give another example, in a machine, all the parts may be iron, but the machine includes varied activities. Although the whole machine is iron, one part works in one way, and other parts work in other ways. One who does not know how the machine is working may say that it is all iron. Nonetheless, in spite of its being iron, the machine has different elements, all working differently, to accomplish the purpose for which the machine was made. One wheel runs this way, another wheel runs that way, functioning naturally in such a way that the work of the machine goes on. Consequently, we give different names to the different parts of the machine, saying, this is a wheel, this is a screw, this is a spindle, this is the lubrication, and so on. Similarly, as explained in the Vedas, Parasya Shaktir Vibhideva Shruyate Swabhaviki Jnana Bala Kriya Cha. Krishna's power is variegated, and thus the same Shakti or potency works in variegated ways. Vividha means varieties. There is unity in variety. Thus Yoga Maya and Maha Maya are among the varied individual parts of the same one potency, and all of these individual potencies work in their own varied ways. The Samvit, Sandini, and Ahladini potencies, Krishna's potency for existence, his potency for knowledge, and his potency for pleasure, are distinct from Yoga Maya. Each is an individual potency. The Ahladini potency is Radharani. As Swarup Damodar Goswami has explained, Radha Krishna Pranaya Vikritir Ladini Shaktir Asmat Chaitanya Charitamrita Adilila 1.5. The Ahladini Shakti is manifested as Radharani, but Krishna and Radharani are the same, although one is potent and the other is potency. Brahma was mystified about Krishna's opulence, Nijamahimani, because this opulence was atharkya, or inconceivable. With one's limited senses, one cannot argue about that which is inconceivable. Therefore, the inconceivable is called achintya, that which is beyond chintya, our thoughts and arguments. Achintya refers to that which we cannot contemplate, but have to accept. Srila Jiva Goswami has said that unless we accept achintya in the Supreme, we cannot accommodate the conception of God. This must be understood. Therefore, we say that the words of Shastra should be taken as they are, without change, since they are beyond our arguments. Achintya kalu ye bhava na tam starkena yojayet. That which is achintya cannot be ascertained by argument. People generally argue, but our process is not to argue, but to accept the Vedic knowledge as it is. When Krishna says this is superior and this is inferior, we accept what he says. It is not that we argue, why is this superior and that inferior? If one argues, for him the knowledge is lost. This path of acceptance is called avaroha panta. The word avaroha is related to the word avatara, which means that which descends. The materialist wants to understand everything by the aroha panta, by argument and reason. But transcendental matters cannot be understood in this way. Rather, one must follow the avaroha panta, the process of descending knowledge. Therefore, one must accept the parampara system. And the best parampara is that which extends from Krishna, evam parampara praptam. What Krishna says, we should accept, imam rajarshayo vidu. This is called the avaroha panta. Brahma, however, adopted the aroha panta. He wanted to understand Krishna's mystic power by his own limited, conceivable power, and therefore he himself was mystified. Everyone wants to take pleasure in his own knowledge, thinking, I know something. But in the presence of Krishna, this conception cannot stand. For one cannot bring Krishna within the limitations of Prakriti. One must submit. There is no alternative. Natam starkena yojayet. This submission marks the difference between Krishnaites and Mayavadis. The phrase atan nirasana refers to the discarding of that which is irrelevant. Atat means that which is not a fact. Brahman is sometimes described as astulam anandvarasvam adirgham, that which is not large and not small, not short and not long. Brihad Aranyaka Upanishad 5:8:8. Neti neti, it is not this, it is not that. But what is it? In describing a pencil, one may say, it is not this, it is not that. But this does not tell us what it is. This is called definition by negation. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna also explains the soul by giving negative definitions. Najayate mriyate va, it is not born, nor does it die. You can hardly understand more than this. But what is it? Is it? It is eternal. Ajo nitya shashvato yam parano nahanyate hanyamane sharire. It is unborn, eternal, ever-existing, undying, and primeval. It is not slain when the body is slain. Bhagavad Gita 2:20. In the beginning, the soul is difficult to understand, and therefore Krishna has given negative definitions. Nenam chindanti shastrani, nenam dahati pavakaha, na chenam kledayantyapo, na shoshayati marutaha. The soul can never be cut into pieces by any weapon, nor can it be burned by fire, nor moistened by water, nor withered by the wind. Bhagavad Gita 2:23. Krishna says it is not burned by fire. Therefore, one has to imagine what it is that is not burned by fire. This is a negative definition. Om Agyana Timiranda Syagyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sarigur Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare Hari Rama Hari Rama 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 Hari Hari Iti Reshe Take Nija Mahimani Spa Pramitike Paratraja Tutani Rasa Namuka Brahma Kamito Anishaipi drashtam kim idam iti vamu yati sati chachada jogyatva sapadi paramoja javanikam. The Supreme Brahman is beyond mental speculation. He is self-manifest, existing in his own bliss. And he is beyond the material energy. He is known by the crest jewels of the Vedas by refutation of irrelevant knowledge. Thus, in relation to that Supreme Brahman, the personality of Godhead, whose glory had been shown by the manifestation of all the four-armed forms of Vishnu, Lord Brahma, the Lord of Saraswati, was mystified. What is this, he thought, and then he was not even able to see. Lord Krishna, understanding Brahma's position, then at once removed the curtain of his yoga maya. So there's a lot in this purport, verse and purport. So Brahma is bewildered. So it's described in the third canto that everything, this universe, is the body of Lord Brahma. So all of us are what we consider to be me, my body, my mind, my society, my possessions, everything that I consider to be me and mine, actually is part of Lord Brahma's body. So if Lord Brahma is bewildered, then what hope have we got? So, we should be kind of humble in that regard. And acknowledge that there's actually no way for us to understand Krishna. It's not possible to understand Krishna. It's not possible to understand Krishna. But I heard one nice explanation. You can never fit an ocean into a cup, but the cup can be full of water from the ocean. So something very small cannot accommodate something very big. So we're called Anu, we're very infinitesimal, and Krishna is called Vibhu, he's all-pervading. So it's not possible for something very small to completely understand that which is very great, but that thing which is very small can be completely full in itself of knowledge. So the process of yoga means to become complete in ourself. So the Vaishnavas explain it's not possible for the infinitesimal spark of the Supreme to become the Supreme, but the infinitesimal spark can be completely fulfilled in its own capacity as a part and parcel of the Supreme. So that being said, there's enough knowledge given through the Vedic literatures and through the Acharyas that we can fully come to a full understanding of what is my relationship with Krishna. Although we may not be able to understand fully everything about Krishna, but still we can understand everything about ourselves in our relationship with the Supreme. We can fully understand why do I exist? For example, we're born into this world, and we play, people buy us toys, we play around, then they send us to school to get an education and get a job. Nobody actually explains, why do I exist? Like, why do I exist? Why was I born here? Why do I exist? You know, nobody can give that answer in this world. They just say, don't ask questions like that, or they don't even answer. They don't even say, don't ask questions like that. They just think, what's wrong with this kid? But why do we exist? Where does existence come from? Like, there was nothing, and then there was a big bang. Okay, so where does existence come from? Like, why do things exist? There's no answer to that question. Now, the reason there's no answer to the question of why do things exist is because existence is an eternal potency of the Supreme. Prabhupada mentions in the purport, Samvit Sandini Ahladini potencies. The Sandini potency, it's an eternal potency of Krishna. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is eternally existing, and all his potencies are eternally existing. So this thing that we experience called existing, I exist. The reason we exist is because existence is an eternal potency of Krishna. And it can't be understood any more than that. It can't be comprehended by the mind. Krishna's potencies are inconceivable. If you try and wrap your brain around trying to understand where existence comes from, why do I exist in the first place, you won't be able to come to a conclusion, because Sandini Shakti, Krishna's eternal potency of existence, is achintya. It's beyond. It exists beyond the realm of the material energy. And our capability of conceiving things exists within the realm of material existence. Similarly, why am I conscious? Why am I aware? That's the samvit potency. It's the same situation. So, Krishna's existence and Brahma's bewilderment. Prabhupada explains in the first paragraph of the purport, he discusses yoga maya and maha maya. Yoga maya and maha maya. So, there's a nice definition, nice explanation. The potency which covers the actual reality and displays something unreal is maha maya. So maha maya is that energy which has the potency to bewilder an infinitesimal part of Krishna and make that infinitesimal part accept something false as truth. For example, this is me. This body is me. This body is mine. This mind is me, and this mind is mine. And that's how we function. We function within maha maya on a daily basis. On a daily basis, like for example, just to take a daily example, like an everyday example, an every year annual example, on Prabhupada's appearance day. You know, we've all been fasting all day on Janmashtami, starving, but absorbed in transcendental bliss of Harinam Sankirtan. And then the next day is fasting until noon. And then there's a big feast down in the field in the tent. And along with big feasts come big queues. So you're standing at the back of the queue. And then the queue's moving at the front. And you see all the devotees coming out with their prasadam. And then inside the mind, you're thinking, anxiety. Will there be enough puris left or whatever, you know? You're thinking, should I, you know, and they got, oh, look at the size of their plates. You know, all this type of thing. Mahamaya. It's Mahamaya, because Mahamaya dictates that we think in terms of I and mine with relation to this body. But actually, why is this body any more significant than that body at the front of the queue? You know what I mean? We're thinking because this is me, because it's my stomach. I want my stomach to be filled because I'm in distress. I'm hungry. I want to be satisfied. So I and mine, what do they call? Nirashir aparigraha. Profit. Trying to gain for myself. Yoga kshemam as well. Protecting myself and providing for myself. So actually we're all part of the universal form of the Lord. There's no more significance between this stomach and that stomach at the front of the queue. Because Krishna is Paramatma in that heart, Krishna is Paramatma in this heart. Krishna is all-pervading as Paramatma. Krishna is everywhere. Krishna is present in the stomach as Vaishvanara Dev, the fire of digestion. So if we're actually engaged in Krishna consciousness, if we're actually in spiritual consciousness, the reason we take prasadam, we should be serving Vaishvanara Dev inside the stomach, Krishna's manifestation as the fire of digestion. So Krishna's already been satisfied in that stomach over there. Why is this stomach any more important or significant? But because of Mahamaya, we forget the absolute truth and we come to a level of distinctions. This is me, that's you. Separation within the material world. However, Yoga Maya, that potency by which the absolute truth is sometimes manifest and sometimes not is yoga maya. Sometimes manifest and sometimes not, that's yoga maya. So it sounds, you know, it's a little bit tricky, but when a person is in spiritual consciousness, then sometimes he experiences Krishna, sometimes he doesn't experience Krishna. Vipralamba. For example, the separation that a devotee feels, there's two types of separation. There's the separation that we feel due to Mahamaya, we're actually separated by our consciousness, by illusion. We're separated from Krishna. But a devotee is separated. For example, the gopis are separated from Krishna by the potency of yoga maya in order to increase and develop Krishna's pastimes of reciprocation, of relationship with his devotees. So when Krishna becomes... what does Prabhupada say? Unmanifest. He's sometimes manifest and sometimes not manifest. When Krishna is not manifest to the devotees, I'm saying devotees means actual devotees as opposed to sadhakas. So the actual devotees, when Krishna is not manifest, he is actually manifest in his unmanifest form, which is a whole other thing. Krishna is manifest in his unmanifest form. Krishna is absolute. So if Krishna decides to be manifest, then Krishna is perceived. For a devotee who's absorbed in yoga maya, when Krishna is not manifest, then that devotee becomes absorbed in Krishna, in the mood of separation. Because the devotee is absorbed in Krishna, that means Krishna is manifest in his unmanifest form. For us, we just wake up in the morning and have a life full of ignorance. And because we suffer so much, then we think, yeah, I should do some sadhana. And then we become very fixed in our sadhana. And then people think, wow, he's such a great devotee. Sadhaka. He's a sadhaka. It's a different thing for someone who's actually a devotee and who, for whom yoga maya is acting in order to cultivate and increase Krishna's pleasure, increase Krishna's satisfaction. So, Prabhupada explains that Krishna's energy, his maya shakti or swarup shakti, is one, but manifested in varieties. He quotes the verse, Parasya Shaktir Vivideva Shriyate. There's a verse also in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 2, Text 11. Famous verse, Vedanti tat tatva vidas tatvam yajjnanam advayam brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavaniti shabdyate. Learned transcendentalists who know the absolute truth call this non-dual substance Brahman, Paramatma, or Bhagavan. So, this discussion between, as Prabhupada says, Krishnaites and Mayavadis. There's a lecture Prabhupada gave, I think it was in Calcutta. It's in my van, in the tape recorder. It's an old van, it's got a tape player. He says, there are some philosophers who say that God is impersonal, and there are some philosophers who say that God is personal. But we Gaudiya Vaishnavas, we say that God is simultaneously personal and impersonal at the same time. So, quite often, there's this thing of Mayavadis, impersonalists, you know, we hate them or whatever type of attitudes. You know, we don't like impersonalism. But if we call ourselves personalists, if someone's going to call himself a personalist, that's his prerogative. You can do whatever you want and say whatever you want. But if you want to represent the Gaudiya Vaishnav Sampradaya in the Avaroha Panta, the disciplic succession from Krishna to Brahma through Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, six Goswamis, through Srila Prabhupada, to us, if you want to properly represent it, and you say, we're personalists, it's not exactly correct. Because the philosophy of Lord Chaitanya is achintya bheda abheda tattva. So to be consistent with our parampara, as Srila Prabhupada says, if anybody doesn't believe me, they can come to my van after and I'll play it. There are some philosophers who say God is personal, some say he's impersonal, but we Vaishnavas, Gaudiya Vaishnavas, we say both. Both. And this verse says, Vedanti tat tatva vidas tatvam yajjnanam advayam. God. This is a definition of God. People like to worship God, but it's very rare you get a definition of God. Like, at least in my Catholic upbringing, you worship God, you pray to God, you do all the rituals, and, you know, God is definitely a person, God is definitely present in your life. But to define who is God, they have this thing like, there's a catechism, they call it, and they say, it begins, there's a series of questions and answers. And they say, who is God? God made the world. That's the first question and answer in the Roman Catholic Catechism. Who is God? God made the world. Well, it's not exactly, because who is God? God made the world is, that's the activities, God's activities. But if you try and say, who is God? There's not really an answer for that. Because God is achintya, inconceivable. So there's a definition here of God, jnanam advayam, advaya jnanam, non-dual knowledge. Non-dual knowledge means that knowledge which is not relative to something else. Like, for example, I was thinking of an example. If you say, this room is, I don't know, it's like 6 meters across, maybe, something like that. 6 meters, let's say, I stand to be corrected, but it's irrelevant. Let's say it's 6 meters across. You think that's an absolute statement? 6 meters. How long is a room? How wide is a room? It's 6 meters. It's actually not an absolute statement, because a meter, there's a building, I believe it's in Belgium, in Brussels. It's either a museum or a scientific research laboratory. There's some building, and I believe it's in Brussels. I might be wrong, it's irrelevant. In that building, there's a piece of metal. And that piece of metal is kept at a specific temperature. And the length of that piece of metal is 1 meter. So at a certain point, the scientists of the world or whoever came together and they said, okay, we have to have we have to define units of measurement. This lump of metal at a specific temperature, because at different temperatures the thing expands and contracts. So a specific temperature, this piece of metal, 1 meter long. Everybody agree? Yep, we all agree. That's what a meter is, 1 meter. So when you say this room is 6 meters wide, what it means is it's six times wider than that piece of metal that's sitting in that protected room somewhere in Belgium. Shishirada Gokulananda Kijai. So actually, every statement in this world, every statement of knowledge in this world is relative to something else. It's relative to something else. That's why the knowledge of this world is called relative knowledge. And it's called, you could say, dvaya jnanam. It's the knowledge of duality. So God means advaya jnanam, non-dual knowledge. That which exists by its own potency, absolutely, with no interference from anything else. Completely independent. Svarat. Fully independent. Abhigya. Fully conscious of both directly and indirectly of all aspects of manifestation. This is God. Now, this God is understood in three ways. Brahman, Paramatma, Bhagavan. So right there in this verse, it's like some people say that Mahaprabhu's philosophy, it's not like, it's not a traditional Vedic philosophy, if you like. You know what I mean? It's a bit of a, I don't want to say speculation, but that's what's implied. Some people imply that about Lord Chaitanya's philosophy. But right here in this verse, at the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam, it says, Advaya Jnanam, the absolute truth is one. Non-dual. There's no duality in the absolute truth. Then he says straight away, this absolute truth is understood in three ways. Brahman, Paramatma, Bhagavan. So if there's three ways to understand the one truth, then straight away, as Prabhupada says, there's unity in variety. Or there's variety in that unity. So this is the philosophy we have to understand. When we relate to Krishna, there's no duality, but there is variety. And that's the reason why Srila Prabhupada, in this purport, he uses the word variety, but predominantly he uses the word variegated. Variegated. And the difference between variegated and variety is, if you have a garden with a whole load of different flowers, you say there's a variety of flowers in that garden. If you have one flower And within that one flower, there are many different colors and patterns and textures. You say that flower is variegated. It has variegated color and texture. Because variegated means that within the one thing, there's a variety. That's why Prabhupada said variegated. That's in the dictionary. So he didn't say variety, because material world, everything's variety. Anyone can understand variety of life. Variety is the spice of life. Why is variety the spice of life? Because material life is so boring, you have to keep changing stuff all the time. But within the unity of spiritual life, there's variegatedness. That's why people, for example, on a Saturday night Harinam, for like 40, the route has changed a little bit now, but for about 30, 35 years, it was the same route. And every week we went past this guy's shop, singing the same song in the same tune. And one day, the guy from the shop came out and held up a sign, and it said, "Sing a different song." It's stuck on the sign. Because they don't understand that although we're doing the same thing again and again and again, we're only doing one thing, we're chanting Hare Krishna. And, you know, we even, okay, there's different melodies and ragas and all that, but you go to any ISKCON temple and you'll find them singing Prabhupada's melody. How, you know, after how many years? Every day, all day, should be all day, you sing Prabhupada's melody, the same song, the same tune. Why? Because there's unity and variety, there's variegatedness in that. There's varieties of experience within the one activity, and that's spiritual life. So spiritual life, you don't have to change things. Your experience will change even though you're doing the same thing. You don't have to kowtow to the trends of society, try and change our philosophy to facilitate people's moods and opinions. Okay, to get in there as preaching strategies, you may say, but what we do is we do Harinam Sankirtan. That's what we do. It's the Hare Krishna movement. I'm skipping ahead. I was usually the class starts with philosophy and finishes with a rant. That's the general style of a Bhagavatam class, how to resolve. So I was going to keep my rant till the end, but what we do is we're supposed to chant the holy names. That's what we should do. And Prabhupada says, like at the end of the purport, he says, neti neti. Again, neti neti. It's another thing. It's another, you know, neti neti is a philosophy that people generally ascribe to Mayavadis. Mayavadis do neti neti, and neti neti is bogus. Neti neti means na iti, na iti. Na means not, iti means this. Not this, not this. So you say, I'm not the hand. Am I the hand? No. Am I the head? No. Am I the mind? No. Am I the intelligence? No. Am I the ego? No. You go through everything within the realm of your consciousness. You analyze it and you think, am I that thing? And the basic philosophy behind it is, if I'm able to perceive something, then by definition, that means I'm different from that thing I perceive. I can perceive this microphone, therefore I know I'm not this microphone. I can perceive this hand, you know, because like you can tell by experience looking at other people or just by inference or conjecture, if you chop the hand off, I'll still exist, you know, and I'll be able to perceive my hand separate from myself. So I'm not the hand. I can perceive my mind functioning in different ways throughout the day, throughout my life. Am I the mind? No, I'm not the mind. I can perceive the intelligence analyzing. Am I the intelligence? No, I can perceive the intelligence. I can perceive my ego. So what am I then? I am that thing that remains after everything else is discarded. Therefore, aham brahmasmi, om shanti, shanti. That's the general conception, that you come to an impersonal conclusion, So therefore, it's for the impersonalists, and we don't do it. However, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in Prahlad Maharaj's instructions to his classmates, they has to sarva sangato jagatastur iti dvidha atreva mrigya purusho neti neti iti atat tyajan. There are two kinds of bodies for every individual soul, a gross body made of five gross elements and a subtle body made of three subtle elements. Within these bodies, however, is the spirit soul. One must find the soul by analysis, saying this is not it, this is not it. Thus one must separate spirit from matter. So the instruction of Prahlad Maharaj is that we should do neti neti, which is not this, not this. We should analyze ourselves. Because if we don't analyze ourselves, then we just end up doing whatever comes into our mind. The mind dictates that we should do something, and then we do it. But if the mind dictates that we do something, and I think, should I do this? Is this good for me? Then maybe we don't do it. You know? So we should develop an analysis like that. And Prabhupada says, he calls it definition by negation. That thing which is left after you remove everything else, that thing is that thing that you are. But he gives the example of a pencil. It is not, a pencil is not a car. A pencil is not a microwave. But it doesn't say what it is. It doesn't say what it is. So what am I? I know what I'm not. I'm not material. I'm an eternal spiritual particle. That's what I am. But that doesn't really mean a lot, to say I'm the soul. It doesn't mean much. What means more is that if I'm not the body, if I'm not the mind, that means something more. So how do I know what I am? Because the soul, Atma, it's a kind of a abstract concept. Abstract, you can't quite conceive of what the soul is. So in the Gaudiya Vaishnav tradition, it's explained, because you are a thing, you are Atma, you are soul, you have a function. In Brahman, Brahmeti Paramatmeti Bhagavan Iti Shabdate, in Brahman realization, the soul has no function. The soul exists. And when a jnani becomes self-realized, he experiences Brahmananda, the bliss of merging in the Supreme Absolute Truth. But there's no function there. He's just absorbed. Krishna describes in the Bhagavad Gita, what is it Prabhupada translates in the sixth chapter? Boundless ocean of transcendental bliss. Something along those lines. He's experiencing boundless bliss. So we say that it's considered detestable by a Vaishnava. But actually, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that liberation in Brahman becomes detestable at the stage of bhava. That's one of the symptoms of bhava. So when you begin to have preliminary emotional relationship with Krishna on the spiritual platform, then liberation becomes detestable. But for us, in the neophyte stage, liberation is not detestable. What's detestable about a life completely devoid of any type of suffering or anxiety and absorbed in transcendental bliss? What's detestable about that? But Bhagavan realization offers relationship with the Supreme. So, for Brahman realization, sorry, it's getting a bit boring and technical, but for Brahman realization, you don't have to know what you are. You just have to know what you're not. But for Bhagavan realization, you need to know what you are. So how do you know what you are? You know what you are by performing the function of what you are. You have to perform your function. The function of the Jivatma is bhakti. Bhakti. Actually, the pure function of the Jivatma is prema bhakti. Now, prema bhakti is something that we don't have. Prema bhakti means pure, unadulterated, transcendental, loving service to the Supreme Lord on the spiritual platform, separate from any kind of conception of the body. Like, for example, Rupa Goswami and the Goswamis, they used to be absorbed so much in prema bhakti that they used to forget to eat. They used to forget to sleep. They used to have a little glass of buttermilk each day. Sometimes they'd forget. It's like, hands up, who's ever forgotten to eat, you know? So that's prema bhakti. So it doesn't, how do we get to that stage? Golokera premadan harinam sankirtan. The function of the jivatma in the sadhana stage and in the pure stage is harinam sankirtan. We should be doing harinam sankirtan, which is the philosophical basis for my rant. So it's explained that, now this is relevant to the devotee community, shravanam kirtanam Smaranam, Padasevanam, Archanam, Bandhanam, Dasyam, Sakyam, Atmanivedanam. There are 9 limbs of bhakti, and they all go on in centers for Krishna consciousness. However, all 9 are dependent on the first 2, Shravanam, Kirtanam. If you don't do Shravanam, Kirtanam, for example, I won't give an example because then people get upset and say, oh, you're slagging off everybody's service. But if you're doing a service, and if you're not doing Shravanam Kirtanam, that service will become just the same as somebody else who's doing the same activity somewhere else, not in a spiritual community, if you're not doing Shravanam Kirtanam. Whatever you're doing, whatever the activity is, it's just an activity. But the reason the activity is connected with the Supreme is because our consciousness is connected with the Supreme. If our consciousness is not connected with the Supreme, that activity is just the same activity as, like, you know, take cleaning, for example. There's people all over the world sweeping floors. What's the difference that we sweep Krishna's floor? Okay, you can say you can get some sukriti from it, some agyata sukriti, it's true. But in order to develop that service as a bhajan, in order to develop that service as a relationship, my relationship with God, to cultivate my relationship with God, then that service has to be combined with hearing and chanting. If it's not combined with hearing and chanting, then what's the difference? You can, okay, it's good to sweep Krishna's temple, but you could just sweep anywhere. It's just sweeping. Unless you're connected to Krishna. And to be connected with Krishna, you have to do Shravanam Kirtanam. Now, Shravanam, hearing, you can read Srimad Bhagavatam. You won't get the clarity of consciousness to understand what it says, what is explained in the Bhagavatam, unless you do kirtan, unless you do Harinam Sankirtan. Unless you're chanting the holy names, you won't have the clarity of consciousness to see what's clearly explained in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Which is why people read the Srimad Bhagavatam and they come out with all kinds of bizarre nonsense. Because they're not absorbed in Harinam. Now, it's described that Harinam, the holy name, there's a thing called Lakshanam. In order to understand a thing, there are 4 ways to understand a thing. Name, form, qualities, activities. Nama, Rupa, Guna, Lila. This is Haridas Thakur's analysis. So Krishna is no different because Krishna is Vastu. Vastu means something that has actual substance. Like there's the verse in the Bhagavad Gita, that which is night for all living entities. Yanisha sarabhutanam tasyam jagarti samyami. People think that spiritual life is some kind of imagination. Spiritual life is not an imagination. Material life is an imagination. That's what that verse is saying. That materialistic people are thinking that spiritual practitioners are involved in some kind of dreaming or some kind of imagination. But sadhakas, serious sadhakas, they think people who are absorbed in material life are involved in some kind of imagination. Because Krishna is called Vastu. Vastu means that thing which actually exists and actually has real substance. Krishna has real substance. Krishna is not some conception or some idea. Krishna is the absolute truth. He's got substance. He's called Vastu. So in order to understand Krishna, Krishna's got 4 lakshanam, symptoms, ways by which he can be understood, which is nama, rupa, guna, lila. His name, his form, his qualities, and his pastimes. Now, Haridas Thakur says, he states, that those 4 are dependent upon nam. Because Nam, Harinam, the holy name, realizing the holy name has the potency to make a devotee realize Rupa, Guna, and Lila. If you chant the holy name, if you have realization of the name, then you'll get realization of the form, you'll get realization of Krishna's qualities, you'll get realization of Krishna's pastimes. Therefore, Harinam, Harinam, Harinam Eva Kevalam. The only way is Harinam. So, it's a bit bizarre that considering this philosophy, the last thing anybody wants to do is go on Harinam. Because that's what we do. Everything else is a support system for Harinam Sankirtan. If you take away Harinam Sankirtan, then what have you got? You got a building, you got a nice garden, you got a temple. I don't want to go too far, but if you take out Harinam Sankirtan, if you take away Harinam Sankirtan, you've got nothing. You've got nothing. This movement is Harinam Sankirtan. It's a Sankirtan movement. That's why we say all the time, Harinam, Harinam, Harinam Eva Kevalam. There's no other way except Harinam. Now you can do Harinam on your own, or you can do Harinam together. There's two ways. Sankirtan means two things. Sam Kirtan means chanting together in a group, and it also means Samyak Purnam Kirtan. Kirtan of that which is completely perfect. So Samyak Purnam Kirtan. Samyak Purnam means Krishna, the absolute truth. So Samkirtan means chanting the names of Krishna. So you can do Samkirtan on your own. And if you're doing Sankirtan on your own, you're not on your own. Because that's an external vision to say that you're on your own if you're chanting Harinam. If you're chanting Harinam, you're associating with devotees. You're associating with the Acharyas. If you're chanting Harinam, Narada Muni is there, Srila Prabhupada is there, everybody's there because the entire spiritual world is there in your heart. Like for example, Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. There's a river called the Yamuna. On the banks of that river, there are forests. And in that forest, Krishna is walking. So that's all present in the heart of the living entity. So if you're chanting Harinam, then Krishna's there. So if Krishna's there, how are Krishna's devotees not there? So the point is that Sankirtan is what we do, you know. And there's no excuse, because it's like this world is full of people working hard all day. Like the general way in this part of the world anyway, it's a 40-hour week. You do 8 hours a day, 5 days a week, 40 hours. You get a half hour for lunch, 2 15-minute meal breaks in the middle of the day. Other than that, you work. You work for 8 hours every day. And it's not easy, but people do it. Why? Because they have a taste for material enjoyment. That's why they do it. Because they hate it. Well, they don't always hate it. It's not that you hate it, but you go to work and you perform this austerity of working hard all day, so you get the money. Once you get the money, then you get to do the things you want to do. And because I want to do the things I want to do, therefore I do the work and I get the money. But they do it 8 hours every day, 40 hours a week. So why can we not go on Harinam for 8 hours in a day? Why can we not do that work of going out and Harinam, 8 hours a day, to make an effort? Why? Because we don't have a taste. That's why. Our taste is elsewhere. Our taste is for material sense gratification. That's why we make up different excuses to not go out and do it, because we're absorbed in sense gratification. That's, you know, you can't say stuff like this to people because people get upset, but when you're giving Bhagavatam class, then you're just discussing philosophical principles, so you're allowed to say stuff like this. But actually, that's what it comes down to. And I'm not preaching, I'm preaching to myself. Preaching to myself. It comes down to material attachments, material enjoyment. We make all these different, I got this service, or I got this responsibility, or whatever, da da da. But then, as one exalted Vaishnava said, if you can't go on Harinam, because your authorities won't allow you to go on Harinam, then you have to question very seriously, are those authorities actually your authorities? Because Mahaprabhu is your authority. Everyone else is a representative of Mahaprabhu. And if they're telling you to do something different than what Mahaprabhu is saying, then they're misrepresenting Mahaprabhu. Therefore, they're not his representative. Therefore, not your authority. So, I was actually thinking about it. Two suggestions that I came up with. If you say, sorry Prabhu, I'm not listening to you, I'm going on Harinam, they say, fine, I'm kicking you out of the temple. So you say, fine, I'll go and make my own way, and then I'll hook up with the devotees and I'll go on Harinam as much as I want without having to do all this other stuff that I don't want to do. That's one way of doing it. And the other way I thought of doing it is, it's easier to get forgiveness than permission. So you just go, and then you come back and say, sorry, Prabhu. And then you get forgiveness, you know. It's easier to get forgiveness than permission. And at the end of the day, as Krishna said to the wives of the Brahmanas, because their husbands were not happy about them going to see Krishna, and they were concerned about the repercussions when they go home. And Krishna said to them, don't worry, no one will give you a hard time. Even the demigods will be pleased with your activity. And that's what happened. Because Krishna's in the heart. If you please Krishna, then everybody becomes pleased. You know, if you please Krishna, everybody becomes pleased. So, one last thing. I've gone way over. Sorry. Well, it's like, it's an act of kindness, actually. I was thinking about this thing. There's a whole wave, you know, I've seen anyway in ISKCON. It's all about being kind, isn't it? Kindness. So we should be kind to people. So when a building is burning down and somebody's sleeping peacefully, you know, and they're having nice dreams, and you would think, oh, look, they're sleeping so peacefully. You don't want to disturb them too much. Well, it's not really kindness, is it? If the building's burning down, you want to kick that guy and shout at him, get up, get out. The building's on fire. You have to get out. That's an act of kindness. And if he's like, you slap that guy. That slap is an act of kindness to that person because of the situation he's in, you know? So to be all kind and da-da-da-da-da and nice all the time, it's true we should be kind. We should be kind to people. But how we're kind to people depends on the circumstances. So it's not all that everybody should be all fluffy and, you know, flowery all the time. Sometimes if somebody gives you a good old kick up the backside, and then afterwards, you think, oh, that was really good, I'm glad, you know? I'm glad that happened. That's a chastisement, isn't it? Like, the spiritual master is supposed to chastise, but that's his kindness, because afterwards you think, yeah. So, we should, like, actually become a bit more revved up, you know? A bit more revved up for doing the thing that it is that we're actually supposed to be doing, you know? Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. If there's any questions or comments,